You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. My name is Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, everyone. It's a real sad boy Sunday today for across the league. I think there's going to be a lot of honesty sessions, a lot of fellas playing for their spot in first grade, a lot of testing times through the week, a lot of sitting in the dark and listening to the tortured poets department because a lot of teams lost in really bad fashion this weekend.
They sure
did. Some terrible, horrible, embarrassing defeats.
It'll be a melancholy Monday by the time you all hear this. We will be doing things a little bit differently this week. There'll be no Thursday preview at the end of this episode, obviously, because we've got the three games. We're just going to do the whole round preview on Wednesday night. We figured that was the most logical way to do things, as most of you are probably out and about doing things on Thursday anyway. Better off to just do it that way and then recap all 8 games next Monday. So if you're wondering why we don't talk about the Anzac Day games at the end of the show, that's why.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's jump back to Friday night. Dragons 30, Warriors 12. Nick, the Warriors looked unbelievable for about 20 minutes, and this is going to be a common theme in a few of these recaps, but they looked unbelievable for the first 20 minutes. Couldn't get the lead out to a respectable amount, and then it just turned on a dime, and the Dragons just put on an absolute clinic, particularly Zach Lomax, who's maybe proving it doesn't matter where he plays. He's just feeling like being the best player in the world this year.
The first 15 minutes, the Warriors were just doing all the things they do so well, throwing a lot of shape at the Dragons, a lot of off-ball movement. They were really going after Moses Sully and Kyle Flanagan and sort of the space in between those two. And the opening try was one of those ones where it was so easy. You were like, there must be an obstruction.
I wrote that down. I said, Sean Johnson gets obstruction try without the obstruction.
Yeah. But apart from that one, the Warriors just couldn't crack him again. And sometimes it was because they were taking the wrong options. Other times it was because they were taking the right options, but the Dragons' scramble defense was really, really good. And I think that the Dragons sort of getting through that really tough period at the start of the game and only conceding the one try just gave them such a confidence boost in what they were doing. And you can sort of see in the reaction to the Sully try, you know, that like fellas get pumped up whenever a try is scored, right? Why wouldn't you? It's the best thing in the world. But I think you can really see like a bit of next level intensity there, you know, and they just sort of rode that wave all the way to a really, really impressive win. I think the momentum of the game really changed when the Dragons bench middles came on. Jack DeBellin was really strong. Blake Laurie was really good. Ben Murdoch-Masilla had some really nice runs as well. And the Warriors, you know, I always talk about how good they are with their processing, their systems and all that sort of deal. But the other side of that is it can be hard for them to sort of like explode their way back into matches. You know, they really have to work at it and grind at it and really sort of craft a comeback rather than getting three tries in 10 minutes due to just wild shit happening. They're not really a wild shit type team. And in games like this where they needed to start scoring quickly, you can sort of see the other side of their style. You know, once the system stops working, they don't really have the rocket fuel to G it up again. But very impressive from Saints.
Particularly when you factor in that the Warriors essentially played with 15 players. So Fanua Blake ended up almost playing the entire game, which, you know, ended up giving him a lot of run meters, but perhaps took away some of that pop and some of that power that he always brings, especially in that second stint. So it was an interesting makeup of the team in that regard, but I completely agree with you. Once they weathered that early storm, the Dragons felt like they could go on and do something. It was quite funny. Like, their first attack ends with like Flanagan and Sully running into each other and losing the ball. And you think this is just going to be a night of comedy from the Dragons and the Warriors are going to cruise to victory. But yeah, like beyond that, they were very clinical in the sort of last 55 minutes of this game. I think Ravalawa getting his first of the year, good to see. Ben Hunt, another really impressive game. And as I said, Zach Lomax just all over the place. Like on both sides of halftime, just with completely different parts of his skill set. Just really, really impressive.
Yeah, he's becoming the player he was always supposed to be. You know, he's always had this sort of football in him. There's a reason he was so highly touted as a junior. There was a reason he made that Origin squad back in 2020. There's a reason that the Dragons paid him so much money back then. You know, like he's got it in him to do things that not just centers, not many players in the league can do. How many players in the league could have taken that catch, you know, for his try? He's going full pelt, doesn't break stride to go up and get it. Like that's incredible stuff. He's kicking.
Yeah.
2-point field goals, and he's still doing all the great yardage stuff he was doing on the wing. He's finally making the most of his considerable talent, and I guess it's the most Zach Lomax thing at all that for it to happen, he had to sort of get the rocket up him of not just moving to the wing, but even just leaving the club, you know? That seems to have really changed something in him because, you know, I don't think, based on his track record, would anyone have been that shocked if after he signed the deal with Parra, he had a shocker? You know, like I don't like just based on what he's done in the past, I don't think that would have been outside the realms of possibility. But it's one of his best games of the year, you know, and it's getting to the point where I'm starting to think he's going to play Origin this year. And I don't know if it'll be at center. I don't know if it'll be in the wing, but I think it'll just be in the team somewhere. A guy that talented playing like this, you kind of have to have it, you know. So I guess it's a credit to him that he's finally pulling it all together and he's finally knuckling down and playing the sort of football that he's always promised, you know?
It's so funny. Like within 12 hours of this game finishing, there was like one of the clickbait aggregation websites already wrote a story about how there were calls for Zach Lomax to backflip on the Eels. And I'm not going to click on it. But
calls from who? Calls from the front bar of Steelers Leagues Club.
Yeah. Neil Desmond, probably the most truth anyone's ever dropped on this show is you can say anything as long as you preface it with some are saying. You say whatever you like. Yeah,
arguably or with all due respect. If you say that, then you can say whatever you want.
Yeah. You know, it's arguable that Zach Lomax should stay in Illawarra. Yeah. Like, give me a break. But yeah, it is very funny how it's played out for him. And I agree with you. Like, we'll do our Origin teams in a couple of weeks, but he's got to be there in some capacity, I would think. Particularly like given the last couple of years where they've always sort of kind of shoehorned other guys into the centers rather than having guys who actually play there. And I think Lomax brings goal kicking, field goal kicking apparently as well, and just yardage, everything. He's playing so well this year. I'm really, really happy to see him. Tyrell Sloan, another strong game too. Like what a glow up that's been from him so far this season as well. Are you worried about the Warriors at all, or is this just putting it down to it's another ground they don't really travel well to, whatever, they're missing, they didn't have a lot of forward depth in this game. On another day, they could have been up by more in the first 20 minutes and the game pans differently, blah, blah, blah. Or is there more to it than that?
I just think they sort of short-circuited in this one, you know? I wouldn't say I'm concerned or anything like that because I think now that we're 7 weeks in and the sort of the stratas of the competition or the levels are sort of making themselves a little bit more apparent. The Warriors clearly aren't on that top level, but I think at their best, they can be at the head of the second level.
Yeah.
And it'll take a few more bad losses before I sort of move off that. Like, because
upper middle management, the dream.
Yeah, upper middle management, you know, sort of like regional assistant to the to the director type stuff. This game did probably show a few of their shortcomings that they're going to have to cover. But like, man, everyone's short circuits sometimes. And I really think it was a case of Saints playing really well and putting them off their game. And they kept doing that even when the Warriors had a lot of ball in the second half. There was the save on Tolu Harris, where I thought he was going to score for sure. And the Dragons literally, he was like falling to score and the Dragons caught him and dragged him back. You know, they Flano's boys got a lot of, they got
that was
a lot
some,
of fight in
that was some way near a Dragons defense, dare I say. You remember that game Matt Cooper like grabbed Chris McQueen like he was a barfly as he was diving over to score a try and pulled him back. Still the best tries I've ever seen, but it was kind of, Not as cool, but still a little bit reminiscent of that. So, yeah, Dragons
sort of desperation
can't get a read on them.
Yeah.
I think they're a lot better than we all thought they were going to be. I should have stuck on my take from November. I shouldn't have walked it back after the Charity Shield. That's a lesson to everyone at home. Don't be a coward. Stick to your takes no matter how stupid they might seem at the time.
They got a lot of ticker, and until the roster changes the way Flanagan wants it to, you can't ask for much more than a lot of heart, you know, and they got it. So good for them.
No, indeed.
No,
as in, I agree. You can't ask for much more. No, they're gutless.
Good for them. Nah, fuck them.
Team with who didn't play with a whole lot of heart in the last half an hour of their game, the Parramatta Eels.
What the hell happened here?
It was 10-4 Parramatta with half an hour left. They ended up only avoiding having 50 put on them because the Dolphins missed 5 conversions. At one point in the second half, the Dolphins had more completed sets and in a try than not.
Yeah, so and when was their last try? Their last try was in about the 71st minute, right?
Who? The Finns? Bostock, yeah. 74th minute, yeah.
74th minute.
So 50, so we're looking 49 at 40, to 74, we're looking at 40 so 25 points minutes.
In 23 minutes. Jesus Christ.
Like, and I will say, it was nice to have the television in 4K so I could just see how shiny all the players were. You could see how humid it was.
It was a sweaty game.
There were some sticky boys up there.
It was like watching a Tony Scott movie. You know what I mean? There was just a sheen on everyone. They all looked great. It was
felt awesome. Like I was watching Gladiators. They're all just shined up and ready to brawl.
It looked rowdy up there too, man. Like,
it really did.
The crowd was counting down from 10, like all the way through the second half. I assume there was some bloke at the front of the grandstand putting love down that. Beers or whatever. There was that incredible shot of the really big fella with
the big
shirt
unit
off.
Rubbing the beer cans on his chest.
Yeah. Warren Smith goes, "It's shirts off night in Darwin." And I was like, fucking oath, get into them, boys.
When the footy's in town, every night shirts off night.
All right, we'll get to para later because there's a lot to dissect here. Let's start with the Finns.
Ooh.
Wow, just scorching hot. Fantastic stuff.
What level, given the Fogarty news as well, which we'll get to later, what level of crime would you commit to get Isaiah Katoa to your club? Because I'm thinking pretty high. I'm thinking regicide.
Really?
Mm.
Well, that's kind of like, that's the king of crimes.
Yeah.
But there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go after that.
What's my second act going to be?
how are you going to get him a halves partner?
I don't know. But I think I'd do it.
God, he's I What crime would I commit?
Arson.
Depends what I'm burning down. Maybe
something
extortion?
You don't like. Okay, yeah.
The X makes it sound cool.
It does. You could do the Paulie Walnuts point at people while you're extorting them.
Oh, I do like the sound of that. He was awesome. Again, he's having a really great season. He's really, really leveled up his game in his sophomore year. Showing such a great command of the attack. He just seems to know
that
where he wants to
Bostock
go. That
pass to Bostock is outrageous.
Oh, yeah. The thing was, there was long passes, there were short passes, there was double pumps, there was really nice kicks. And he
just knows exactly when to release the ball every time. Yeah. It's remarkable how mature he is for his age.
Well, yeah. In the first game he played, that first Dolphins game last year, he self sets up Asako for a try with a really nice bit of what they call tempo running, which is where you sort of adjust the speed of your run as you're getting up to the defensive line, right? And it's a really sophisticated piece of halves play. And it just seems like something that he can do so naturally and so well. And you watch a lot of the tries that he sets up, a lot of it comes because he varies his pace as he's going towards the line, you know, and just really, really cool head. Like all the greats, plays with so much time, just could not be more impressed. He's really sophisticated for such a young halfback.
Yeah, absolutely. But he wasn't alone. I think that they did so well to eat up so much Parramatta pressure in the first stage of this. Like, you can almost split this game into two parts, basically before Tessie New scores and afterwards, in my opinion, are basically two different games of rugby league. And they did so much good defensive work in that time period. There's again, just like that Warriors game, on another day, Parramatta could have been out of sight in this game, but they weren't. And the Dolphins just stuck to their processes and just hung in there. And it was a really gritty performance. And grit's not really a word we've used to associate with the Dolphins a whole lot since they've come into the competition. They were really strong here. They were really strong defensively and they ate up all that pressure. And then once they got a sniff, it was just lights out. I mean, it was just an incredible last half an hour. Their attack was just so beautiful to watch. It was free flowing. They were just taking every chance that they could and not really giving it a second thought. And sometimes when the game's flowing like that and you think that, you know, every pass is going to work out, you just got to ride that hot hand and ride it. They did.
Did they ever? Like Jerry Marshall King, he had a couple of hot hands with what he was doing. He was like playing straight, playing direct, high tempo, like the exact sort of style I kind of expected Parramatta to play with. Mm. And in the hot conditions, they must have just been a nightmare to try and defend. Trey Fuller at fullback just looked so sharp.
The new Matt Moylan.
Yeah, well, yeah, young Trey,
the kid, the 27-year-old kid.
Oh, dude, as far as I'm concerned, he's Mr. Redcliffe. He's the longest serving Dolphin. He's been playing Q Cup with him for 6 years now.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
He's Mr. Redcliffe. But yeah, just really tidy in the first half, collecting a lot of kicks. I think Parra tried to press him with his kicking game, which is the right thing to do given he's not experienced at the top level. But he stood up to that pressure brilliantly, and just his speed and support play was so good. Go back and look again at the try that he scores when Marshall King takes off. I don't think like Fuller's not even really looking at the play the ball, you know, but Marshall King goes and Fuller just goes on instinct and backs up and scores a really good try. Maxi Plath getting a double. Like him in the middle of the field. Just
future dude, Max Plath.
Oh, just gets around the park well.
Mm.
No higher praise for any dude at all, you know? So yeah, but just a fantastic display. You know, the old boy wasn't home. So the kids put on a rager, you know?
It's great. Yeah. I joked on Friday that Wayne wasn't there because he was already moving his stuff into Brad Arthur's office. But,
oh no, that's me.
I mean, it is, but you know, the knives have been sharpening from Eels fans for a while now. I think a collapse this is not going to do anything to dissuade them.
I mentioned on the Friday show, I was at a wedding on Saturday night with my dad's side of the family. Nearly all of them are Parramatta fans. And I knew that after this game, there was going to be one thing that they're going to say all night. None of them like Brad Arthur. None of them ever really have. I've stood up for him a lot at various Campton family gatherings. They all call him BO because they think he stinks.
I've been there for this. It's great.
And the one phrase I heard over and over and over again from relatives, great and small, multiple generations, they all said to me, BO's got to go.
Rolls off the tongue.
It does. It's difficult because it is very catchy.
Yeah. But once there's a mantra about you, it's hard to come back.
It's hard to take it back.
If it can be chanted very comfortably by onlookers, then that's a problem.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. Brad Arthur's future has been a talking point pretty much up since the summer, you know. And I've said a lot about how highly I rate him as a coach, and I do think he's a good coach, and I think the fact that this team isn't responding to him anymore says more about the team than it does about him. I think he was totally on the mark with all his stuff in the press conference. How he says they're a part-time footy team and they don't want to make the hard choices and they decide when they want to play and when they don't. And he's right. He's right about all of that. I don't know if he can fix it. I don't know if he's the guy that can fix this problem they've got themselves into.
Well, if people thought it had run its course with Arthur because they were perpetually a team that would finish like sixth and go out in the second week of the finals, and then they broke through that season by making a grand final in 2022, but that still didn't really keep the Wolves from barking within, you know, the next 12 months when they dropped out of the eight completely last year. And I know people are going to point to the lack of Mitch Moses being there and say, well, that's a pretty big reason why they're not winning or they're not being as successful as it can be, but I don't think Mitch Moses being there would have stopped them from conceding 73 tries in 20 minutes.
Yeah, they just looked so soft up the guts. And that's meant to be such a strength of this team. Yeah. Dylan Brown had an on-field interview with ABC Sport. I'm not sure who the person was, but he was like you could sort of feel the frustration in his voice for what was going on in the middle of the field, you know. And like, he's a popular target for a lot of people because he's sort of been put into that lead playmaker role, but the problems are bigger than him, you know? And I think the problems really are sort of more emotional than structural. And if you look ahead to what Parra's got coming up, they got Manly this Friday, then they've got the bye, then they've got the Broncos, and then they've got the Storm at Magic Round. So it's real gut check time for them now. It's real gut check time. If they can't rebound, if they can't show something, if they can't stand up for Brad Arthur, then this could be the end of his time with the club, you know, which would be a big change for them. Been there a long time, but it's clear that something's not working. Something is short circuiting.
Yeah, sometimes things just run their course. This happens with coaches sometimes. It's a shame they didn't get the premiership to go with that, which is so often the case. But yeah, that's life, I guess. But who are Parramatta fans going to boo once they ran Jake Arthur out of town? Once Brad's gone, who are they going to boo?
I'm sure they'll find someone.
Yeah, someone named Arthur. I don't know. The Aardvark. Why not?
Well, they don't. They have. Wasn't there that winger that had a game for him last year whose first name is Arthur?
Was it
Arthur? Arthur. He had a double barrel surname.
I'll back you, but I don't remember it.
One moment.
Yeah, no worries.
Arthur Miller Stephen.
Okay, sure. That's a guy. Sounds like he plays for the Waratahs.
He's dude from Mackay. One game, sure. One try.
Oh, can't ask much more than that.
Para fans, please don't boo him.
Well, I look forward to Arthur Miller Stephen being their main target of scoring in 2025. Okay, jumping ahead to Bathurst. Penrith 22, West Tigers 6. Tigers started super bright, and then it just kind of got away from them a little bit.
Yeah, it did. The game did kind of unfold the way I expected, where the Tigers were really up for it physically. And it was a strong first half for them. They were really in the fight. And I felt like they were competing well with Penrith and forcing errors and that sort of thing. So there were just a couple of lapses for them that really cost them badly. I think like Junior Tupou made a couple of errors and a couple of misreads, and Penrith were able to capitalize. But they were doing stuff. Bateman was playing really well, getting some stuff going. That backline reshuffle where they had to put Naden onto the wing and Bateman into the centers, that hurt them. And then in the second half, like the game was just sort of going along at a pace that like Penrith work out every single week, but the Tigers were really working hard to keep up with it. And while they created some chances, they just couldn't finish them. Their execution was really poor. A fair few times, it was just the last pass that went away. Mm. And after about 15 minutes of the first half, I was like, all right, well, Penrith are just going to sort of keep hanging around, and then there's going to be one big play and they're going to score, and then that's going to feel like the end of the game. And then the Paul Alamotti try ended up being that. You know, like Penrith just had a little bit more ability to exist in that set-for-set battle than the Tigers do. The Tigers are still learning how to do that. The Panthers are the masters of it. And James Fisher-Harris...
Give me the f***ing ball.
Give me the f***ing ball.
Is the master of Give Me the Fucking Ball.
And he's the master of Front Row Friday. Hey, feeling? Falling deeper into the hole.
Mate, a lot of season left.
Long time to go.
Oh my God, there's only 20 weeks left.
Yeah. I don't want to make him feel bad, but shout out to our friend Joe Barton, who forgot that I picked him, not you, and messaged you. Congratulations.
Yes. Not Joe's finest hour.
I thought it was. The king of comedy. Loved it. Yeah. Just got the ball and everyone got out of his way. Look, what an effort. I doubt he's ever scored from that far out before. He had a fair bit to do, but he did it.
Maybe this is the new James Fisher-Harris.
Maybe.
Maybe it's all long range tries now. Maybe the Warriors are like, well, Fanua Blake's gone. We need a blockbusting try scoring front rower. We need a flying fish, baby.
Yeah. Well, you know, and congratulations to Eddie and anyone else who followed me financially and got on that anytime. You're welcome. Lead you to victory, boys. Benji, I mean, we love Benji, right? Little disappointed by his comments after the game. Like, once you start, it's round 7, as you said just then. There's a lot of footy to go. Once you start talking about rubs of the green and stuff like that, it comes off a little bit petulant, especially in a game where you only conceded one penalty.
Oh, I think it's that bit in the first half where
that is
the sort of decision that would really stick with you. I got multiple Tigers fans texting me about it well after it happened, you know, like the punters weren't happy. And yeah, like for them to really take Penrith to the limit, let alone beat Penrith, they probably did need a little bit of the rub of the green. They needed a few of the bounces and they just sort of didn't get any of them. And like when you're in that position, you don't think about the calls that you did get. You know, for example, there was the Caesar challenge on Schneider that 100% should have been a penalty and wasn't. You know, and that was like the set before the sin bin. But like, people are going to get frustrated, man. Lots on the line here, and I didn't think this was the most well officiated game.
No, I agree with that.
Like, was the referee Wyatt something? I think he's a young fella.
Wyatt Raymond, I believe his name is.
Wyatt, like, that's a cowboy name, dude.
That's a justified character.
That should be a justified character.
Yeah, I think this was the guy that debuted last week. I think it was only his second game.
Do you think he'll be rotated out?
Perhaps. I mean, I thought that. I mean, I do agree with Benji. It was a clear penalty, but I don't. I'm not really.
Yeah,
sure
absolutely, absolutely, it was.
But yeah.
But they had their own chances in this game, and the biggest reason they lost is because they couldn't take advantage of those. You know.
No.
Penrith just sort of Penrith this one right up. You know, it was all the hits, all your faves. You know how they do it. But I do want to talk about Paul Alamotti a little bit.
Yeah.
So a very highly touted junior at the Bulldogs. He was in SG Ball when I first heard of him, and some people at the club I know were saying, yeah, this guy's going to captain first grade one day. Like, he was really, really held in high regard. I'm still not quite sure why things fell apart the way they did. But he signed that 1-year deal with Penrith. I think he's taken a while to sort of get up to speed with the way they do things out there. Missed the squad for the World Club Challenge entirely. Like, that sort of that sort of raised my eyebrows a little bit, because I thought he was going to play a really big part in Penrith this year, but maybe just took a little bit of time to figure out how they do it. But I think he's figuring it out. I thought he was really strong in this game, and he played like that highly touted junior he was a year or two ago, you know, and busting through like that. Not a lot of centers can do it. Center's not the strongest position in the league, and it's only a 1-year deal. And if he has a couple more games like that, someone is going to pay him a lot of money. And I think it'll end up being a really good deal for someone, because he'll have learned a lot of good habits at Penrith. You know, this is not a new story. Young guy goes to Penrith, learns how to be great, goes to another club and does really well. You know, they're making a lot of boys rich, you know, filling in every club with players, all that sort of deal. So I don't know if he'll play next week. Taylor May was out for personal reasons, so he might be back or he might not be, but I would be really, really keen to see more of him. I'm still a very big Paul Alamotti believer.
Yeah, absolutely. He and great for him to get a try. Felt good for him. I can't believe we ended up with 25 scoreless minutes to end this game as the Seagulls beat the Titans 34. This could have been our first ever double burger. This could have been 51-50.
The fact that neither of these teams had the gumption to become the first team in Premiership history to score 40 points and lose sickens me.
How did it not? Like, the way this game was going.
I don't know. Like, how crazy is that? Like, so I saw the score for this one before I watched it, and I saw 34-30. I was like, well, it must have been a last gasp, crazy 75th minute winner or something like that. And then someone said to me, no, it was scoreless for like the last 30. And I was like, what is going on up there? But I tell you, it's nice to see the Titans go back to their roots.
Yeah. This like is classic Titans.
A man can't be anything other than what he is. And the Titans, you know, lost their way. Where was the craziness? Where was the insanity? I missed it. I wanted it. I needed it. And we got just a little bit of it, you know, and it made me happy.
Before we get onto the game itself, there was one aspect of it that I was particularly delighted in. Now, you know, I've been at the forefront of this movement for a few weeks now, been trying to bring That's Gold back.
Yes.
Everyone loves That's Gold. You see your mates, you walk into a pub or something, you see your mates, you hit him with a That's Gold. They smile, they do it back. Everyone's happy. Feel like society was in a better place when we had That's Gold as sort of a...
When we say we used to be a real country, we're talking about when we used to do That's Gold.
So to see Tom Tabojevic do the That's Gold after scoring a try in this game warmed my heart. And then to find out that he was doing it in tribute to a young fellow who's unfortunately suffering from cancer. Just, I mean, what a great gesture from him, and really putting the That's Gold movement right back into the forefront of public opinion, because we've missed it. I feel like we've just lost part of our identity without That's Gold. And you know what? On Sunday morning, the sun was a little bit brighter. The birds chirped just a little bit sweeter, because That's Gold's back in our life, baby.
That's right. That's right. How old's Tom Trbojevic?
I don't know. 28?
28. So That's Gold is like, it's heyday's the early 2000s.
He's 27. Yeah.
So he's 27. So let's go 20 years ago. So he's like 5, 6, 7 years old when That's Gold is really at its peak.
Oh yeah.
He's he's probably the last generation who remembers it with the same fondness as us. And the fact that he's trying to give it back to the youth, giving it back to the people. When I'm writing about his career, man, I'm not going to write about the Dally M. I'm not going to write about the Blues player of the series. I'm going to write about That's Gold and the bravery that he showed to bring it back, you know? But like you're right though. Like we're having a laugh about it, but like just a lovely gesture from him for a kid who probably really needed a bit of inspiration. So that's awesome. Yeah,
you talk about Brave. It says here, I'm reading this article now, Bose plays in the under-12s for Mona Vale. He's going through stage 4 cancer, undergoing chemo right now. So hope he wins that fight. And I'm glad that Tommy could do something nice for him in that game.
Awesome. Great stuff.
Yeah. That's a positive story with no little jokes or anything. We're just genuinely happy about this. It's great.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of our innocence back. It's good. I wasn't feeling great at halftime, Nick. I thought you'd put the stench of yourself on this Coltrane Cup experience. But then I remembered you're back. You won last week. We've put the worst behind us. And I also remembered your first preference was the Eels this week, which negated the curse completely.
That's
at
it.
That point, I calmed down.
We beat the system. We outfoxed the curse.
Yeah, we really did. It's David Fafita.
We crushed it with facts and logic.
We did. I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of me. But I do have some bad news for you.
What's that?
Down and Dirty took the Warriors.
Heartbreaking.
So it's just Bungard Butts.
But there's no
adjective to know what state they're in.
No detail on their location, on their cleanliness. Just
nothing.
This is like when a club rebrands with a new jersey because the old design was too busy or whatever, and it's just bland and boring.
Yeah.
Bungard's Butts, who cares?
It's all right. Maybe we got Mick and Joel who are also tied for first, but maybe one of them could change their Patreon name to an adjective or something.
I don't know. See, now it
feels like we're forcing it. Yeah, don't do that.
Down and Dirty Bungard Butts was just a beautiful moment in time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Is David Fafita consigned to the Titans because it wouldn't be fair if a good team had it?
What's doing? Why is he still coming off the bench? I don't like it.
I don't know. And they just look so much better when he comes on. Like, that try score was hilarious, by the way. That's proper, like, backyard footy, bigger brother shit.
Well, that you sort of had your heart set on Fish getting Give Me the Fucking Ball so you could crow about Front Row Friday, but Fafita was probably a better candidate for it because not much on, and just Fafita's all over him.
How can a single human being think that Dave Fafita's coming into dummy half to get a quick spread on? Like, what the fuck do you think he's going to do when he pushes everyone out of the way?
Who'd he push
Matt Lodge?
Oh, yeah, well.
Well, not known for critical thinking, but like, Jesus Christ, boy, switch on. You reckon he's going to go himself, do you? Fuck, what are we doing?
Yeah, so Manly really to get back to their freewheeling ways. You know, some of their defense probably not the best, but it was good to see him sort of open up the motor and really get on the road. And there probably always was going to be an element of looseness to their game. Joe Barton, second mention of the show, he sent me a long and panicked text after I Coltrane Manly. He said, don't do it. We're going to lose. Because he had it in his head that Dez wouldn't let the Titans lose. He's totally psyched out by Dez Hasler. He also made some good points. He said, it's another big trip for Manly after the New Zealand trip last week. This was after we found out that Nathan Brown was going to be out. So all of a sudden the Manly bench lost a lot of its punch. And he reckoned that the Titans were going to get a rub of the green from the referee after Hasler blowing up last week. So those were all fair points.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Manly were able to do enough of their good stuff to really get it going. And while the Titans were definitely better, Brimson just has to stay in the spine. I don't care where.
Absolutely.
But it has to happen. And they were able to get Kelly going and Carl Pereira going and, you know, Fafita got going too. They were able to do some good things. But they're still they just shoot themselves in the foot all the time.
I just don't think they're this. They shouldn't be this bad.
That Tana Boyd intercept to Tolu Kola.
So bad.
That's just a shocker, man. Like, and that like just a little thing like that can end up being
Tana's parting gift to you, who Coltrane Manly in his first great career.
I had a man on the inside.
It's funny after at 10 again. So, third Joe Barton mentioned at 10-0. I texted him. I was like, you're welcome. And then like we were chatting throughout the game. And then at some point I said something that he thought was jinxy. And he said, now Tanner Boyd's going to score the winning try. And he nearly did. If not for Ethan Bullimore, he would have. So yeah, very funny. Ethan Bullimore comes onto that bench and looked okay and scores a really good one for
I've always liked Bullimore.
Me too.
Very fast for a front rower and a good man to have come off the bench.
Well, after Brenton Lawrence retired, they needed another fast front rower. So
there's always got to be one front rower in the league who's fast.
Yeah.
Just one. Can't have two. He's not fast, but Taniela Paseka was awesome up front. He's having a really, really great year. He's another guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he enters Origin calculations as well. Large lad and knows how to use it, which is really, really good. Saab back on the wing, sort of gave them just an extra attacking dimension for a team that loves going wide like Manly do. Like having someone who really has the jets like that is really, really important. Yeah, and what this was, I think for Manly, this kind of was just a win no matter how kind of game after the sort of 2 weeks that they've had, and expecting them to sort of play the percentages a little bit more against Power and sort of really kind of turn the screws a little bit. But yeah, just banking wins. Good for them. Team of the show.
Yep. Stack them up. Titans, the win's coming at some point. Probably not next week, a way trip to Auckland on a short week, but you know.
Yeah, that look, that won't be easy.
You never know.
But yeah, they'll get someone at some point, you know?
Yeah. All right.
Who do we think it'll be, real quick, for the 5 Titans fans who listen?
They play the Knights, who may not have Caelan Ponga at home in like 3 or 4 weeks.
No, they play the Knights at Magic Round.
Oh, is that what it is? They just showed the draw on the TV today. So and it said at home. So okay, I didn't realize that was Magic Round.
The week before that, they play the Cowboys at home.
Okay.
They're not actually, so they've got this trip to Auckland, but then they're not leaving Southeast Queensland again until the middle of June when they come down to Leichhardt. Yeah,
jeez,
so
that's a long home
stretch. Long home stretch. I think they'll get a win somewhere in there. That stretch also ends with them playing Souths. So
after a bite,
yeah. So
no, I reckon I'm calling it. I reckon they'll beat the Knights. I might call Trenum. You heard it first. Well, it depends. Right. Ponga looked pretty crocked when he came off. If he's out for a month and doesn't play in that game, I think the Titans have a really good chance.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Nick, you won the second half. Congratulations.
Second halves are so important. Some say more important than first halves.
Not in this case, though.
Not in this case.
You lost the first half, 28-0.
And I certainly am not saying that.
No. Tough night for you, the Canberra Raiders Rugby League Football Club, Chevy Stewart, and just everyone associated. Oh, and Harry blew up from Canberra on game day to be there.
Did he? Oh, God bless him. The thing is, like Suncorp's such a great stadium.
It
right?
is awesome.
And every year when the Raiders are, if the Raiders are playing there against the Bronx, I always toy with the idea of going up because, you know, best stadium in the world. Brisbane fans are always out in force. It's so loud. It's so vibrant. But I can just never shake the feeling of like, what if I drop all this money on flights up there and a hotel room and all that shit and they fucking lose?
The concept,
I just can't risk it.
The concept of the away trip in sports is so alluring, and it's always so much fun until you play the game.
Yeah.
Like back in our A-League days, we had 7 away trips to Melbourne before we won a game. It's the first 6 we didn't win. Rather, one of my favorite stories, our BDC friend of the show, in addition to being a West Tigers fan, you know the story. Big Melbourne Demons fan in the AFL. They'd made the finals for the first time in like a decade or something a few seasons ago, and they played West Coast. So big, expensive trip to fly to Perth. On short notice, on like 4 days notice, fly to Perth for the game, come back again, and tickets, all that stuff. And I was watching whatever NRL game was on the Saturday arvo that day, and I was like, oh, wonder how BDC's boys are going. It was halftime in the footy. I was like, I'll flick over. They were losing 59-0. They hadn't kicked a goal. And I can't remember what the final score was.
Brutal.
But I feel like at halftime, they were still in single digits.
Oh, fair dinkum.
And
that
I thought, mate. Good
that
on you for going, but that's
rough.
that's like the extreme, and this is almost as bad.
Well, the worst one that we've had together is we went down to Melbourne for when George Kambosos fought Devin Haney the first time.
That wasn't great, yeah.
And it was a great weekend, but the fight itself just sucked.
And the atmosphere was
so
flat, knew.
And yeah.
It was every like, fan knew within like 2 minutes. Oh,
yeah,
shit.
After like 2 rounds, they're like, wow, actually, George can't touch him. This kind of sucks.
Mm.
Oh, man. Before we get into this, the Daily M votes have just dropped in the last 10 minutes. Oh, and this game has given us our bad Daily M vote of the week.
Which Raider got a non-deserved Daily M point?
Simi Sasungi.
He got try assists. So,
and a try.
There you go.
Oh, dear. That's not great. This whole game was, for me personally, not great. The first sort of 10-15 was really, really, really happy with how everything was going. Canberra were doing all the things I wanted them to do. They were putting bombs up for Corey Oates. They were playing really physical. They were moving the ball around in attack. And when Fogarty put the kick in, oh no, when Levi, of all people, put the kick in for Young and he goes down near it, I've sort of jumped up off the couch and not really looked at it properly. And then one replay and it's very clear that he's dropped it. And like just watching it, I could feel myself deflate because Canberra really needed something like that early to get them into the game. And then Brisbane, because Brisbane are, I think, a champion side in the making. They were able to shrug that off, turn Canberra away a couple more times. And the first time they got anything like a little bit of good ball, they just stretched Canberra out wide, got Walsh some good matchups, and then shit was just over for like 20 minutes. It was just an absolute onslaught. And it was kind of magnified because I've talked a couple of times about how Canberra's got this bad habit of conceding tries in bunches. One can often bring two for them, and it's a real concern. And no one can put them on like Brisbane. No one can score as quickly as the Broncos. And they were just doing it. And what was it by the end? I think I passed out for a second there, but like, I think it was 20 points in, or 28 points in like 2 minutes.
It was an explosion of points between the 12th and the 31st minute. That's when all their points came. So yeah, it was a point a minute, more or less.
Just totally blew them up. And like with Brisbane, we can often talk about how fast they are and, you know, explosive and creative, and they're doing all these crazy things. Like Pythago NRL, what does he call it? He calls it like they're just lobbing nukes out there constantly. You know, like Brisbane have entered the atomic age. But I thought they won this game not because of raw ability or playmaking, or just like instinctive play. I actually thought it was a really sophisticated performance from them. And without Adam Reynolds, you don't often think of Brisbane playing that way. But I thought the way they were able to target some of Canberra's weaknesses was just a sign of a team that's really, really just absolutely in their bag at the moment. You know, like, it's easy to go in there and say, well, Chevy Stewart's in his second NRL game, he's probably a little bit undersized, it's pissing down rain, let's get after him. But if it was so easy to target weaknesses in other teams would be doing it more often, if you know what I mean. It's actually hard to be disciplined and stick to the plan and keep doing that sort of stuff. But Brisbane just did it so, so well, you know? And I was like, it sounds dumb to say I was impressed, but I really was. That sort of period there where they scored all their points really encapsulated what they've been doing these last couple of weeks without some of their biggest stars. And now Haas is coming back and Reynolds is coming back, and Brisbane, what I want to say, their season was at a crossroads after that loss to Penrith, because it wasn't. There was so much time left. But they sort of had to get back to some of the things that they did last year when they weathered the storm during Origin without a lot of their good players. And they knew how to do it. They just had to find their way back to it again. And just, boy, haven't they. Just, wow, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, shout out to Jaden Hunt, who basically single-handedly stopped us from being 50. But, you know.
I appreciate you, Jaden. I do.
Mm. Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's terrifying that a team can, yeah, as you said, 28 points in 20 minutes or something, and then basically just cruise to the finish line. Terrifying.
Yeah, I really want to wrap Ezra Mam as well. I know he threw a couple of intercepts late, but I don't really care about that. The game was over. Nah. But every time I see him without Reynolds now, I think he can be a real sort of field general halfback one day. And it wasn't something that I thought he was going to be able to, even a couple of weeks ago, I wasn't sure he was going to be able to do it. But every time he's sort of been handed that responsibility, he's just done so, so well with it. And he's just really taking his game to the next level. It feels funny to say this is only his third season. Gotta remember, last year was his first full season in first grade. He debuted halfway through 2022, and just the speed with which he's come along is just, it's such a credit to what they're doing up there with that program. I think I want to say that Lee Breers, who's an assistant coach up there, is playing a big part of it. I don't know how closely he works with the halves. I imagine it would be pretty closely, but whatever they're doing up there, they're doing a great job with him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been so, so impressive, and yeah, they needed a win like this just to get back on track. And the cavalry's coming next week. Those poor old Tigers.
Oh man, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough. I'm going to go out to Campbelltown, might witness a murder.
Be there.
You know.
Yeah, be fun though.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was always great watching him play, except when it's happening to you.
Well, we don't have to worry about that next week. We just chill. It'll be fine.
Well, yeah. But, yeah, so Canberra, a lot of the concerns that I sort of had going in got exposed pretty badly. And I thought Canberra sort of got a bit of a lesson. You know, this is a younger side and with some young guys in key positions. And Brisbane just really showed them what life's like at the top. And if you want to get there, then you've got to be able to weather these storms, and Canberra couldn't really do it. Chevy Stewart had a pretty tough night at the back, dropping a few balls and all that and getting caught out of position. With young fellas, that happens. You know, so I thought
and you'd rather it happen in a game where you weren't going to win anyway.
It's a close game. With young guys, it happens, you know, and I thought, you know, you can say he played badly or whatever, that's fine. But I thought some of the Raiders fans sort of took it a bit too far with some of their commentary that I was catching up this morning. And I thought that was pretty shit on their part. But Ricky Stewart made a good point in the presser after the game. He said to Chevy at halftime, I'm not worried about the first half. Like, don't worry about any of that. Like, just sort of go out there and show me, show me your heart pretty much. Show me if you can fight back from this. And I thought he really tried to, like, he was taking it up. He was still getting smashed. I think he had an error or two in the second half, but there's no quit in him, you know, and he can get bigger and he can get stronger and he can get better under the high ball, but you're either tough or you're not, you know?
Yep.
And it was a tough night for him, but I think he showed his toughness as well. And Reece Walsh went up to him after the game and sort of gave him a pat on the back and said, you know, you'll be back, young fella. Walsh is only 21 himself.
Old man Reece Walsh. Yeah.
But I thought that was really good of him, because Reece Walsh had a couple of games like this when he was a Warrior.
Yeah, absolutely.
It feels like a long time ago now. But it would be, I wouldn't have as much of a problem with this loss if the Fogarty stuff didn't happen.
That's so tough, man.
That's so tough. Like, it's so tough.
Because I don't really know where you go from here.
Like, we've talked a lot about Canberra's depth this year, and I think they do have really good depth across the park, but the one thing that they cannot replace, the one thing that only one person at the club can do, is kick a ball like Jamal Fogarty. There's only a couple of guys in the league who can kick the ball like Jamal Fogarty, and his kicking game has been such an integral part of all their wins this year. All the good passages of play they've had have come off the back of Fogarty's kicking game, and losing him just sort of radically changes this whole team's process. I like Kaya Weeks as a player. I liked what I saw in the preseason. But he's not the same sort of player as Fogarty. He resembles Ethan Strange a lot more, you know, with he's fast, he's got good footwork, he's a good support player. He's got an okay attacking kicking game, but he's not putting up screamers like Fogarty. He's not kicking at 70 meters when he strikes him right like Fogarty, you know. And to that end, I think Canberra's got to make a couple more changes. I think Danny Levi's got to go. He had an absolute shocker out there. There was that kick for touch that, like, I felt my soul breaking.
It was, you know, so far from the touchline.
Yeah, that sort of showed another way they're going to miss Fogarty. They're going to miss Fogarty's composure. They're going to miss him leading them around the park. You could see that with the two intercepts they took, right? So Schiller took one, Tim Walker took one. And if Fogarty's there, maybe they sort of play smart for a couple, or they put it together for a couple of plays and maybe get a consolation try or two and really sort of give themselves a little bit of confidence for next week. Well, you know, we lost, but, you know, we got the last four tries or whatever. But instead, they was running around like headless chooks. You know, poor old Simi Sasangi, Dally M, vote getter, did his best, but he's not a 5'8". Like, you know, he was doing what he could out there. But there was, and, you know, Strange is still really young. Chevy Stewart was dealing with his own things, and yeah, it just wasn't a lot. It just wasn't a lot of smarts out there without Fogarty, and that's what's really going to be tough. You know, like, they need to get Wolford back in this team because they need as much sort of playmaking nous as they can get. There's no point to having a really strong pack of forwards if your hooker can't bring them onto the ball, and I don't think Levi's been able to do that well through 7 weeks. But I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think Levi's going to hold his spot, and they've got two big games coming up against the Sharks and Manly. And I said before this game that it's
playing
a really
the Sharks again already.
Week. Yeah, yeah. It's a really important 3-week stretch for Canberra because they're playing one of the best teams in the comp, and then two teams that, if they were full strength, I would say, well, I would hope Canberra are on the same level as. But now it's like, now it feels like they've sort of slipped down a tier. Now it's like they're going to be looking up at those those sides rather than meeting them as equals. So.
Yeah.
It was really deflating because it does feel like the arse has dropped out of the season a little bit.
I mean, it's really tough to lose your halfback more than anyone else.
Yeah. So not great. Not great.
Yeah. What are you going to do if Ricky names Danny Levi at halfback on Tuesday?
Panic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pick Wolford. Pick Simi Sasangi at hooker.
The only change I'm expecting, I think Weeks will play halfback, and that'll be the only change. Say Wolford did came in, like, I don't hate the idea of then Canberra just rebranding as up the middle all the time with the forwards and with their speed and all that sort of deal. Like, wouldn't hate that at all, but it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen. I will say, I really hope he keeps Chevy Stewart in the team.
Yeah.
He's probably not as first grade ready as I thought he was. But I think with young fellas like that, it's really important to show a bit of support to him. I've never forgotten something Wayne Bennett said once. He said, it's easy to have faith in people when everything's going well. Mm. Sometimes you've got to pick a bloke when he's a bit down to sort of try and boost that confidence. So I really, really hope they pick him again as tough a night as he had.
For sure. Jack noted that despite being down 28-0 after half an hour, you had like the fifth most embarrassing loss of any team this weekend, which is actually true somehow. So
yeah, it's a loss that aged okay.
Yeah, because one of those teams that should be thoroughly more embarrassed than Canberra is the Newcastle Knights, who went down 36-12 again. I was cackling this afternoon when I saw the tweets coming through that they'd changed the halves again. Gone back to the start.
Man.
Gone back to Gamble and Hastings. It's just keep shuffling the deck chairs around, boys. It'll all work out. Now Caelan Ponga is injured. They got absolutely shellacked. They looked awful. The Dogs could have won this by more, if I'm being honest. And like, what a disgusting performance from the Knights. The Bulldogs were very good. Don't think anything wrong. The way they're shifting the ball around the park on both sides is really impressive right now. I'm really enjoying watching them and all that. But fuck me, the Knights are grim. They are so shit at the moment. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. Like, I tipped Canterbury in this game. I thought, well, I'm wrong all the time, except when I'm right. But I did it in the expectation that they were going to maybe sneak home just a little bit. They were going to sort of get a little bit of their good footy together and end up making it happen. But they just dominated them, didn't they? They looked a step ahead through the entire game. And with due respect to Canterbury, if they look that far ahead of you, something has gone really, really wrong at some point. And we're at the point now where Newcastle's good finish to last year is just a memory, and it feels like they're getting further and further away from that all the time. I'm not sure what they were looking for with the halves reshuffle. I don't know if Adam O'Brien spoke about it in the presser. I haven't had a chance to watch that yet. But just the fact that they were shuffling again, I think was a pretty bad sign. What is it? Is it three different combos they've used now?
Yeah, they've used each combination of those two guys, right? So
yeah. But have they used each of them twice?
They've gone back to the start now.
No, I'm just saying it would be pleasing if it was two.
Is it two weeks of each?
I think so.
Have they had a bye?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, on a numerical level.
Yeah, no, I'm just pleasing. Thinking out loud, like, is it two? I think it might be three for the OG combo now, because I think they did 2 weeks of this, right? And then they dropped Hastings, or they dropped Gamble. Who they dropped first? I don't remember.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter, because everyone who was dropped will return, and everyone who will return has been dropped at this time.
That's right.
But yeah, they were just getting blown up in the middle of the field really badly. Like, Canterbury have sort of found a style that really works for them, that's good, you know, and can be dangerous. But hard stuff up the guts is not a hallmark of it. Like, Sam Hughes charging over for a very soft try in the first few minutes, that really showed the sort of game that we were getting, you know. And the Knights were just getting absolutely blown up all over the place. And there have been games in the past few years where that's happened to them, and Caelan Ponga has been able to save them. Caelan Ponga in conjunction with Best or whatever. And Ponga clearly came into this game underdone and tried to battle through it as best he could. But it was clear he was off a step. And without that sort of security blanket, they just crumbled. Like, and it was absolute free fall. It was really, really poor, you know? And it's hard to see them, how they're going to dig their way out of it. Because they've tried the shuffling around in the halves. But again, as poor as they both were, I don't know if that's the big problem. I do think the big problem is more
the goal line defense is so bad.
Yeah. There's just not a lot of like intensity there. There's not a lot of, you know, like they were in the back end of last year, like putting your body on the line and really throwing yourself around and all that.
How is Sam Hughes crashing through five dudes 2 minutes into a game to score a try? Like, it's really bad. Yeah. I pulled it up, by the way, while you were talking. You were right. Rounds one and two was Gamble Hastings. Rounds three and four was Gamble Cogger. Rounds three and four were Gamble Cogger, and rounds five and six were Cogger Hastings. And then we're back to where we started. So every 2 weeks, change it around. That'll fix it.
Yeah. So yeah. So that's the tough part. I don't know where I want them to go. I don't know what I want them to fix other than just like a generic go harder type thing. So if I was a Knights fan, that would be the big concern for me. And especially if Pong is out for a period now. I think they were saying it was like a tendon injury. Well, he left the game in a moon boot or something. Yeah.
Anytime a guy leaves in a moon boot is not good.
Don't love that. Maybe that's how we end up seeing Will Price. That could be fun. Yeah. But I think their reserve grade lost 50 to 6 or something.
Yeah, they lost 88-18 across the two games today. So
is that bad?
It's not good.
Yeah. So tough times up in the Hunter. Tough times.
But not tough at all for Canterbury.
Yeah. Fantastic. The Knights were really poor, and we have to conscious of that. But they really were. It's taken them a while, but I think they've locked into the style that works for them, which is one we talked about a lot. Getting the point of attack as wide as possible, changing direction off that point of attack as much as possible, lining up that left edge every opportunity. There's something to be said about having like a nice balanced attack with strike on both sides, but there's also something to be said about just putting everything good in the team on one side and trying to beat people to death with it.
Who are you talking to?
Forget about it.
All the good players on the left. Only ever go that way. It rules. Nothing bad can ever happen.
Oh, you know how they say a bird needs two left wings? It can't fly with two left wings.
Mm.
But an ostrich can run regardless of how many wings it has.
That's right. It can.
Yeah, I felt the Canterbury ostriches, man. I'm telling you.
I did feel a bit wistful for the glory days of when Souths were good when the Bulldogs brought on the Blake Taff victory cigar with 15 to go in this one as well. That's what we used to do. Let little Blake run around for a few minutes when the game's already won.
But yeah, they're playing like a team that has a lot more confidence in what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that comes with a win, and it comes with a good performance on the road against a team like the Storm. I thought Matt Burton played some really nice touches in this game. I thought he was doing a lot of really good 5-8 stuff, which I know isn't always the strength of his game, but I thought he was playing both sides of the field, linking with Hutchinson a lot more, getting involved, playing on the ball. So I was really impressed with him. Maybe not his most spectacular performance. That
40-20 was a cracker as well.
Exactly, man. Like he doesn't have to be a quantity playmaker as long as his touches are quality. I think that's probably the better way forward for him. But I really liked that. I thought Reid Marnie picked his spots a lot more with his playmaking. You know, like sometimes he can try and do a little bit too much. He can overplay his hand a little bit, but I thought he really got the balance right in this one, which made them a far more dangerous team. Sherry, really good again. He's exceeded my expectations. I thought after 4 years away, it might take a little bit more time before we see a bit of the player that he once was, but he's looked really, really comfortable out there. It's a good combo he's got going on with the Fox. Yeah, so just really good signs for Canterbury. I liked what I saw.
I also liked what I saw. Maybe Gordy was right all those weeks ago. Before we move on, we have to talk about the funniest thing I've seen at a football game in quite a while, and that's Jack Hetherington trying to fight Reid Marnie on the field, gets sin-binned. Reid Marnie says he just said he wants to fight me after the game. The referee, forget his name, not important. They should be seen and not heard. Has the foresight to not sin-bin Marnie as well until Hetherington is well and truly off the field because they didn't want to battle the Brookvale incident. Smart refereeing.
Good move, yep.
And then Hetherington gets into a fighting stance and throws a jab at Marnie in the tunnel. The cameras catch the whole thing. I know he's smiling, but that's the smile of a sinister lunatic, not the smile of someone who's mucking around.
What an embarrassing thing to do.
Terrible. What an
embarrassing thing for a grown man to do. I have great affection for players who are maniacs on the field and good blokes off it. I think that's a really important part of this sport that we all love so much. You have to be able to keep it on. There are some things that you do have to leave on the field, you know, and this is one of those. It wasn't even a real fight that they had on the field. It was Hetherington had the shits his team was losing. Marnie likes being a prick out there, and it was a bit of a push and all that. To go to wanting to fight someone in the tunnel off that is just... If I was a Knights fan, I would be extremely embarrassed by that.
You know how we had Grayson Waller on the show on Monday, and he talked about that fan fighting him was the greatest moment of his life. Reid Marnie felt the same way today. He is a wrestling heel in rugby league clothing. He loves it just as much, and he would have been delighted with the fallout of this. Adam O'Brien played it cool, said he didn't know what they were talking about when he was asked about it at the presser, and Seraldo predictably defended Hetherington. Was like, oh, I don't think there's much in it. I know him; he's a good guy and stuff. But on the broadcast, interestingly, even like Braith and Astor, that were like, nah, I'm pretty sure he's not joking around. I'm pretty sure he's serious.
Yeah. Look, he does seem like that kind of guy where if he was smiling at me, I probably wouldn't like it. I wouldn't be happy about it, you know?
Yeah, so NRL investigating that. We'll have more to talk about with that on Wednesday, I guess. So, five very smart patrons, Coltrane the Bulldogs, and five very dumb patrons, Coltrane the Knights. So the duality of men.
Maybe that's what the show will eventually become, just judgment of Coltrane Cup chips. These are the smart boys and these are the dunces.
Mate, when you are literally coming first, you can judge your way.
Too big to fail.
For now, if the Tigers win this week, I'll spew up. All right, last game of the round. Cronulla Sutherland 42, North Queensland 6. We did say this game will tell us a lot about the Cowboys.
Yep.
What'd you learn? It sure did. They are who we thought they were.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. They're just all over the place, aren't they?
I don't really bet, but I hope you had some money on Rocky Road to get a try on debut.
I was on Will Kennedy to score first.
Oh, fantastic.
I was on Will Kennedy and Sammy Rocky Road to score first. Yeah. But
awesome.
Yeah, here comes the money.
Well done, mate. Look at you.
Okay, so before we talk about the Cows, let's talk about your Cronulla Sharks. I feel like they've won games in this fashion many times over the last couple of years. Does this feel different to you? Not this win, because this win was just another big win over a bad team. How they're doing it. Do they feel like a different team, or do you think this is just more of what we've already seen?
I feel like the play that they're getting out of some of their forwards, especially guys like Hazelton at the moment, and adding Talakai to that forward rotation, was just giving them a little bit more muscle, and it's really working. I think they've kind of found a balance. Like, it was telling the fact that they only used Brendan Hamioli for about 20 minutes today, and they were still able to really comprehensively dominate that forward battle. I think that, I mean, I'm not sure what the catalyst for it is, but it seems like something's lit a fire under these guys in the last couple of weeks. And what we've often viewed as their Achilles heel is really sort of become not necessarily like a strength, because their backline and their edges are still so, so good, but it's certainly become not a weakness anymore. And if they can just get like average play, average in the context of like an NRL level pack, if they can get average play out of their pack with the stuff they have going on elsewhere, like that is a formula to go really far in this competition. And I think that just a lot of the moves that they've made this year have worked out remarkably well so far. Like I just mentioned Talakai, but the flip side of Talakai going to the forwards is that Kyle Ira, a guy who Sharks fans have been excited about for so long, has come into that team and just looks like he belongs. Trindle's playing with a confidence that we've not seen. And Hines is starting to actually defer to other guys a little bit more rather than just trying to do everything himself. And then when he does get involved, he's still got some really classy touches like that pass today for the Mulitalo try. I think that the balance they've struck right now is the best version of the Cronulla Sharks as they're currently assembled.
I 100% agree. Well, I do think things feel different. And I think that that move for Talakai is what's really spurred it. He's only doing a bit of spot duty here and there, but he does give their forward pack more athleticism. He does give their middles more punch. I think Hazelton in his first stints have been really, really strong. And then Jack Williams has been really good off the bench. Cam McInnes is playing good football. And then all the other things that they do so well, that they have done so well for so long, you know, the back five giving them yardage, their spine linking together and creating, that's all still there. Every time that Blake Brayley or Braden Trindle is creating something off their own bat and Nicho Hynes isn't as involved, that's a good thing for them for down the road. You know, the more confidence that Trindle and Brayley can get to play their own game and not rely on Hynes as much, every rep for that is a positive for them down the road. And again, I know how bad North Queensland were, but when I was talking about with Brisbane, you know, like if it was so easy to target other teams' weaknesses, then everyone would do it all the time. It's not as easy as we make it sound sometimes. And I thought Cronulla did a great job of that. You know, they just totally ripped them apart. They looked a class above. They were a class above. So they've got a really interesting stretch coming up. So they've got the Raiders this week. They should be able to handle them. And then they've got Saints the week after that. But then they've got Melbourne away.
Yep.
Then 2 weeks after that, they've got Penrith at home. And then 2 weeks after that, they've got Brisbane away. We're getting into the origin period there. So I'm not sure if one or two of those will be origin affected rounds.
Yeah.
But now that the Sharks have sort of remodeled themselves in this way, I want to see it tested. I want to see it tested against the best. And the two best teams in the comp are Penrith and Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And then the Storm are probably up, they're a fair way.
They're
back,
in the up, they're in the upper middle management.
Yeah, they're upper middle management. And I want to see this new version of the Sharks against that. Because how many times have we said it? The Sharks have been a good team for a long time now without, I don't think, truly threatening to become a great one. But maybe this move is something that can unlock them that way. So I really want to see them get tested like that. I want to see if now they've finally got that tight, that last little thing that they didn't quite have.
It's funny you mention that because I'd pulled up the draw to make a very similar point. And I want to mention the Roosters at Magic Round in between those Storm and Penrith games as well, because the Roosters are a team that the Sharks do not play well traditionally. Of course, they lost that finals game to them last year. And the only time they've beaten them since 2017 was that crazy game at the start of last year when like 400 Roosters got simmed in.
Wow, so really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Roosters have the wood over the Sharks as well. I think they've won like 8 of their last 9 or something. And the one was that the Sinbin game. So that's certainly a team that they've struggled with in the past as well. So that's a 3-week stretch there where we're going to learn a lot about them. And then, Parramatta, who on their day can still be a tight, and Moses might be back by then. That's 30th of May. He could well be back. And then, Broncos. So really, really interesting few weeks coming up for Cronulla. But Like, in spite of everything I just said about how well they played today, I agree with you. We do need to still, even though I do think they'll fare better against these teams when they get the chance to, they've already knocked off the Warriors. They've already knocked off Canberra. These are good football teams. I still can't get excited about the Sharks' premiership hopes until they knock off one of the big, big dogs, you know? Mm. And that's no disrespect to the Warriors or the Raiders or even the Cowboys to an extent.
But there's levels to this game.
Exactly.
And Penrith and Brisbane are the only two teams on the top level.
Even if they beat Melbourne in Melbourne, mate, I think that would
If they beat Melbourne in Melbourne, then that's a, that's obviously a big tick. But even if that happened, then I would move them to the head of that chasing pack.
Yep.
But they're still in the chasing pack. You know,
and I haven't crunched the numbers on this draw of which of these games are going to be origin affected either, which is probably important, but that one.
What are we? A bunch of fucking math learning schedule knowing idiots?
No, we're here to just say things.
That's
right. Saying stuff.
Just two guys talking.
That's right. But it's a really, really impressive result for them. They've got to be so happy with that. And the Cowboys have just been this team for two seasons now. We're just in this holding pattern. Oh, look at us. We beat all the shit teams and get pumped by all the good ones.
Do they beat the shit teams?
This year they have. Cost round them twice.
They occasionally do.
I think this year they have. Well, they're still 4-3.
They lost to Parra last week.
Yeah. That's true.
Parra, who sweated it out in the Darwin Heat, bro.
That's true, but I did tip Parra. I mean, the Cowboys' four wins this year are Dolphins, Knights, Dragons, Titans. So, what are we doing? Got absolutely manhandled by the Broncos, lost a close one to Parra, and then got absolutely manhandled by the Sharks. So who do they play this week? Oh, Penrith in Townsville. So we'll see. I mean,
Cleary will be back too.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens there. But, they
ice up, son.
They are better at home. They are better at home.
They are.
But you'd want to be, if you're them and if you're a Cowboys fan, you want to see a lot more and you want to see some fight, some ticker in that game because this was diabolically bad.
I talk a lot about teams that have the difference between teams' flaws and their ceilings because this is such a long season and consistency is so important. I talk about it a lot, probably too much. I should, Nick, come up with new things to say. But the Cowboys' floor is just so goddamn low. It is in the basement. It is the bomb shelter. Like it is way, way down there. It is subterranean. You know what I mean? It's like, those bars that are down alleyways and then down a flight of steps and then down an elevator. That's where their floor is, And their ceiling is potentially very high because of the nature of the way they play, but because their forward pack is just so, so brittle, there's very little foundations to what they got going on.
Yeah.
And it just makes it so hard where if things aren't going their way, it's so hard for them to sort of grind their way back into matches or work hard to do it because they just don't have the muscles. It was a bit the same in this one, you know, like once those bench middles are on and it's Neem, Granville and McIntyre, like it's bro, it's a smash up, you know.
I was like watching the end of the first game and I checked my phone and someone's messaged me gone, Jeremiah Nano's been benched for Jack Koscielny.
Yeah,
like, what a grim. This guy had best back row in the comp potential like 18 months ago. He was pretty bad today too.
He was, and he's had a bad season. Like he's still young. He'll work it out. But
oh, it's far from the end. But like yeah, that, yeah. Even the fact that we're even saying that sentence is just like yeah. what's doing.
Yeah, and like they just don't seem comfortable playing Taumalolo for more than 30 minutes. Which even if he's old and busted and not what he was, he's still better than what a lot.
I understand they barely had the ball, but he had 3 runs today.
Fox Sports says he has 5 runs.
Oh, I'm on the NRL website. 3 runs for 22 metres.
We'll stay on this story all night if we have to.
Well, either way, it's not many.
Which of the people doing the counting his runs is the person that counts the crowds for Jack Cronin?
Oh, good point. That person's the most wrong.
they just get blown up in the middle all the time. And they just have to play him for longer. Even if he's not the force he was, he's still one of the more capable guys that you got. So you've just got to see how much is there, you know. Townsend had a pretty tough one out there, you know, a lot of mistakes, a lot of missed passes.
He was bad.
The back line toiled hard, like they were all super busy. Scott Drinkwater had the fewest runs of the back five and he had 14 carries. So they were doing their best, but
yeah.
That like most of those guys have an error in them too. Scotty Drinkwater's in a down period right now.
There's no platform for him.
There is no platform for him, but he's not helping himself either.
Like, no, that's true. That some really bad errors. Kennedy oh, thing, that was like, yeah. terrible.
Like he's the gunslinger, right? And sometimes the bullets don't go where they're supposed to. That's all right. That's just the way he plays, but with how poorly the rest of the team's going at the moment, it just makes everything so much harder.
They'll get Hylan Lukey back in the next couple of weeks. Could you see maybe trying to stiffen up the middle by putting in there? Or do you reckon that's not?
I think they have to.
I do. I think too, they have to. I wonder if they will.
But see, it'd be good if they could they could stiffen up the edges by putting him there too. But like they can only choose one, and they're gonna have to choose the middle, I think. So yeah, like just to give him a bit more athleticism, a bit more grunt, you know, they're gruntless right now. They have no grunt.
Did you guess? I opened Jason Tamalolo's player profile thing while we were talking. Can you guess his two favorite TV shows as a child?
Ooh,
you get 2 guesses. If you get one right, I'll give you the point.
Can you give me the genres?
They're both cartoons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Captain Planet?
No. One is on the ABC though. And one was commercial.
Oh, ABC.
You won't get the ABC one. You should get the other one.
Well, can you give me a clue?
The other one's like obviously. I would guess this show if you gave me like 2 guesses for any kid.
Can I guess Captain Planet a second time?
You cannot. It was on Cheese TV.
Oh, Dragon Ball Z.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ABC one is Pingu.
Oh, Pingu, dude. You love Pingu.
I fucking love Pingu. JC, Pingu, a man of taste. Tamalolo's back as far as I'm concerned.
He's back.
Give him another 3 years.
Well, you know what? Okay. Scenario.
What if he starts shouting Noot Noot before every hitter?
I was going to say, what if we bench him and then he does 20 minutes of like Super Saiyan charge ups before he heads out?
That works
there.
Too.
That'd be sick, yep. Dude.
Mm. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Let's do that. Oh,
but yeah,
anyway,
tough times up north right now. We got a saying on the ranch. We're back on the ranch. I hate this.
Yeah, it's not good.
Simi Randrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh no, it's Simi Randrandra. Randrandra's away. Simi Randrandra.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh yes, it will. Yes,
Simi Randrandra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it.
Okay, this is Michael Chamis in the Sydney Morning Herald. Josh Schuster and Manly Seagulls reach agreement over termination payout. Manly will pay Josh Schuster around $200,000 a year for the next per year for the next 3 seasons as part of a deal that will see the back row's contract mutually terminated as early as next week.
Remember when there was the story that Manly had those clauses in the contract where actually they weren't going to have to pay any money at all?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was skeptical at the time that any player would sign a contract like that, but here we are. Great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still very confident that he'll get a run somewhere if that's what he wants to do. I think there'll be no shortage of clubs that'll be keen on him. My Schuster to Canberra campaign is attracting a lot of hate and negativity, and maybe that's deserved, but I'm not going to stop.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to be stop. Like,
I believe, be like, I believe in, if you don't believe in bad ideas, what can you believe in? Good ones.
How many, grow up. How many days until you're like John Cusack in Say Anything, just holding the boombox outside his door playing Fix You by Coldplay?
No, I actually think one forward gets through to him a bit more.
We would. Yeah. Not really the rom-com kind of vibe, but hey, bro, if it works, it works.
Here's the message. I love Lex verse on this. Unbelievable.
Dan Castellaneta's in that movie, by the way.
Dan Castellaneta's in 1-4.
Yeah, he's in Say Anything.
Oh, okay. I've never actually seen Say Anything.
It's okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, there are all those movies, all those Cameron Crowe, John Hughes movies kind of blend together, don't they? Except for Fuel, that shit's awesome.
No, dude. The John Hughes movies are good.
They are. They're all good. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, I rewatched Almost Famous the other day, speaking of Cameron Crowe. Mm. An all-time rewatchable movie.
Great
dude.
Movie. Really great
Sick
movie.
Stuff.
Whew. Yeah. But yeah, Schuster, I mean, we said weeks ago that we'd prefer him, like for him, that it'd probably make more sense for him to get out of Sydney. But
I think he's got to get some things in his life together before he worries about footy. But if footy is something that he still wants to pursue, I think out of Sydney would be a nice fit for him. I think it'd be good for him to get away a little bit of a fresh start, all that sort of deal.
Yeah. All right. You got any other news?
That is about it, my friend.
Oh, I think
most of the news on the field. That's how we like it.
Or in the tunnel, in this case.
Fair dinkum. What's the okay? So you and I have both played a lot of community sport, right? Like you know, grassroots, local level stuff.
Yeah.
What's the craziest post game incident you've ever seen?
That I've been a part of.
Sure.
So once we played West Knockout at I can't remember which field, somewhere in like Ingleburn or Minto around there, and we beat Ayrs, and then they chased the referee up the bell tower that was at the footy.
How the hell did that?
I walked up to a guy with like my hand outstretched, a rather large lad, like to shake his hand, and he just responded by balling his fist up at me. And I went, "Yep, no worries, mate. Good game. See you later." And just got the fuck out of there.
What was the score?
It was West Nigeria, so they weren't long games. They won like 12-6 or something. Gritty.
What were you playing? Footy.
Yeah, West Knockout.
Oh, I thought you were playing soccer.
No. This was school. Sorry. This was Nelson, Ed's. Yeah, soccer,
that's two different worlds, man.
Yeah, it really is.
How'd you
we got it
him?
Done? I don't know.
In fairness,
you know Lee, my mate, you saw the other week.
Yeah, the king of Appen.
He's quite good. He was a halfback.
Okay, nice.
And we had one guy that went. One guy that was in the year above us, Wayne. He played like Harold Matts and stuff for the Roosters. He was pretty good. So,
yeah, righto.
Those two basically carried us.
Nice. When I was playing footy in Ireland, we played in a town called Charleville. And we absolutely smashed them. We ended up winning the game 92-3. It was a very spiteful.
When
encounter.
Did they take the three?
They were down like 60.
Fuck yeah, I love that. That's three. That's rugby, baby.
And we had a couple of blokes on the team who were, you know, sort of near do wells, I would say. Mm. Like, you know, colourful racing identities.
Sure.
One of them was one of our breakaways. And with about 15 minutes to go in the game, he got sent off. And he was still super, super pissed off, wanted to settle some scores. But instead of, you know, trying to fight someone in the car park like Jack Hetherington did, he snuck into the clubhouse and stole a bag of jerseys.
Okay.
So like I was playing under 19s. I think he stole the first grade jerseys or something like that. Right. Snuck them onto the team bus. While we're on the team bus back to town, the coppers come and pull us over and say, "Guys, we think you stole some jerseys." And we were like, no. And then this guy whispers to one of us, "Actually, yeah, I did. I got these hot jerseys that are stashed in the boot." And the coppers sort of said, like, "Well, look, we're going to go out to the car and make a couple of phone calls. And if the bag of jerseys happens to turn up while we're waiting there, wouldn't that be a great way we could all just leave this behind?" And yep, we had to convince good. That we had to convince the dude.
Even at that point, they're giving you an out, man. Just take it. Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah. So there you go. No harm, no foul.
That's eyes up policing.
It's good to see him manage the game like that. You know?
Exactly right. Okay, before we get out of here, give a quick thank you to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon subscription service. Go to patreon.com/NRLBrookies. You get access to a Discord server, an extra show every week, Greatest Games podcast, which we have recorded. I just haven't published yet. Yeah. Merch discounts.
It's coming, we promise.
Yeah, I'll publish it probably. Well, now that we've done this on Sunday, I'll probably do it tomorrow. And plenty more. So thank you to a perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Avnell, Dave, Stu, Super Sexy Hines, your Dally M God. You do not talk about NRL Fight Club. Adam Small, Alien vs. Predator, Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pied and Pom, Butsy, Chivak Snuff Arbicus, Dan Cullinane, David, Detachable Benthany, an anonymous backer, Dan and Dirty Bungard Butts, RIP, Ed Burton, Edwards given immediate compassionate release to return to Slytherin. I'll get back to you shortly. I'm me. Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Kicksouths out of the comp, Kicksouths out of the comp, Kicksouths out of the world, Lachlan Hancock, Mads, Taylor's version, Matthew Duggan, Matt's co-host name is Campton. I've been calling him Crandall. Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins, my name is Nick Campton. Rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Parramatta are a bunch of soft cocks. Don't give them the fucking ball. Sami Army, Paul Mac 78. Cool, push it up, Manly, Reese Brown, Rowan Rodrigo, Roxanne Clark, Sue in Vegas, Shunter, I'm saying nup to the Coltrane Cup, sing it back, whoa. Is he going to do every line of that song for the next few weeks? I love that. Ty, the Black Vegetable, the Brisbane Sniper, Thor, Was, Westlife's Tiger, Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby, and ZZZ, kicks out of the comp, sunglasses emoji. Thank you so much for your support, everyone, loyalties, and everyone's listeners. Thank you as well. For the record, after Friday's show, he messaged me and said, you were exactly right about the ZZZ thing. I wanted it last so that everyone could end the show with kicks out of the comp.
Is that Frankie doing that? Who is
of course it?
It
is.
Oh, I'm just making sure.
That's our tech stuff. Wizard, gaming the system. the with tech some officer. Fucking Boomer Nokia 3310 contacts, fucking shit. Mate, incredible.
Sometimes you need the algorithm. Sometimes up here can do it for yeah. you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's good, man. The names are good. That's a good lot of names. Really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We will see you on Wednesday. I guess we get two shows on Wednesday. Question Time and the preview show.
Well, I was going to say, what if we just got Greatest Games to act as the preview show? Greatest Games to replace Questions this week.
Oh, okay.
Because of, congested schedules, man. Like,
it's true. That's all we can do. No one's going to have titles to four shows before Anzac Day. Grow up. And if you do, thank you. But just go listen to one of the old ones again. It's all right. We'll work it out. All right. Say goodbye, Kevo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.